Watch out! It's a fury of teas!
I certainly don't know what that means. But I'll tell you what I do know, guys. T-Fury is the original pop culture t-shirt destination, selling unique designs every day since 2008. You can snag their shirts for only 24 hours, starting at midnight. Hey, you! Missing a shirt from the past and want to get it again? Head to the T-Fury Gallery, where you can buy some old designs still in print and vote on others to come back from the dead. You know, I like to say zombie style. Every 2 to 4 weeks, T-Fury adds more designs to their gallery, so be sure to keep an eye out for the return of your favorite shirts. T-Fury shirts cover all your favorite topics and fandoms. They got everything from gaming, sci-fi, anime, TV, movies, pop culture, and more. Their t-shirts change daily, so check back as often as you'd like. Also, feel free to get a life if you're not able to check in that much. I don't think anybody's going to hate you for it. Also, don't forget about the T-Fury After Hours sale. If you miss the day's shirt by only a little, they keep the sale going into the wee hours of the morning just for you. Check out tfury.com/nerdist and see what today's shirt is all about. Guys, that is advertising. Hey guys, welcome to episode 93 of the JV Club with the delightful Amira Ruotola Barrent. I am such a fan of Amira's. Happy to say she's also a friend. This is going to be a very quick intro because I need to get this out into the world to you guys. Thank you so much for tuning in for another episode. I got all old-timey radio for a second. I'm very behind in shout-outs, guys. Sketchfest is swallowing me whole as usual this time of year, but I did want to thank for their emails, Kaylee, Melissa, Neil McD in New Zealand. I wanted to thank on the Nerdist page, Ginny, Mark, Scott B, Tots90, Hannah, and Alec. And Mark, I think it was you who suggested me potentially podcasting my mom. And you're not the first person who's asked me about that. I got to tell you guys, I would love it, but she would never do it. She would just never do it. I'm totally happy to ask her the next time I talk to her, but I just know that she won't. Anyway, so great suggestion. I didn't want you to think that was going unheard. It probably won't happen, but, maybe I could get Maria Bamford to podcast as if she was my mom, since she does such a great impression of her own mom. Anyway, guys, I hope you enjoy this episode. I'd love to see some of you out at Sketchfest. Check out sfsketchfest.com for full details. I'm so excited because a couple days ago, we just announced a show that I was able to lock in that is Bored to Death. A salute to Bored to Death with Jason Schwartzman and Jonathan Ames, the creator, and Zach Galifianakis and Ted Danson. So if you needed another reason to come to SF Sketchfest in San Francisco, I assure you this is the one. Talk to you guys soon. Look forward to your questions and comments.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Now I'm recording on this device, otherwise known as a computer.
I feel like, should I record on my device too?
Do you want to?
What should I? I wonder what do I have? What do I have in you my bag?
You could record it on your iPhone.
You know what? I'll get
the voice memo department.
I have my daughter's computer for homework in my car, and great. I have an iPad. And
great.
An iPhone. I'm going to set it all up.
There's got to be a way we could get our bases covered. Oh, my dear
if
Lord.
Only.
Oh, man. New Amira, new haircut.
I did. I cut my hairs. I waited because we did this live class with Oprah on It's Just a Fucking Date, the most recent book Greg and I put out. And in part of it, what they wanted to talk about was a time in my life when I was coming out of what was my first marriage, which was just one of those things where I was young and I just kept falling for the same set of lies and lack of action because I loved him, and it was, you know, it was young love, and that's how I thought it was supposed to be. And so when we broke up for like the 75th time, I went and I had really, really long hair, like most of the way down my back. I went and I cut all my hair off, and because I wanted to be different, and I wanted every time I saw myself in the mirror or the reflection of a window walking in the streets of New York, I'd be like, right, short hair girl doesn't do stupid things.
I couldn't understand that better.
Don't trust your instincts. They're completely wrong.
Right.
do the opposite of what you think, and eventually it'll feel like, right, oh, right, I'm being told that this was the right thing.
Yeah.
But so they wanted to cover that on the life class and show a picture of me with short hair, but I've been wanting to cut my hair for a while. But now, I waited.
Having said all of that, just in case anyone's curious, Amira had very, very long hair further down her back.
Yes.
It is still long. You did not get a buzz cut. It's like a boob length, if I might be so bold.
I'm calling it the wavy long bob because it's shorter in the back.
It's a good wavy long bob.
It's a good 4 inches shorter in the back.
Actually, I do really approve of that because I always wanted to have long hair that was pretty short in the back, but I still wanted my hair to be long because I didn't want it to be like short and then...
I need to be able to put it up out of my life.
Yes.
I need a ponytail or a sloppy. I need it out of my face in life when I'm doing most of my day.
So what's the wavy long bob?
I'm calling it the wavy, because my hair is wavy. So I'm calling it wavy long bob.
Yeah, well, I think it looks fantastic.
Thanks.
And I also just...
It's even better when I curl it and try to make it look nice as opposed to just come to you from the shower.
Well, that would also be fine. Like, you would even come here and shower and do the podcast in a towel if you wanted to.
That seems like next time.
For sure.
Next time.
Next time, when something else goes horribly wrong, we'll call it a
spa day.
A spa day.
Right? We'll put cucumbers on our eyes.
Like glamping.
I think it might be.
Glamping and spa day.
Spa day, right?
Oh, you and your made up words, America. Okay, so the life class,
yes.
I don't want to get too into the haircutting thing if you covered that on the life class, yet, of course, that jumped out at me. I have the life class recorded on my DVR. As you know, I'm in the process of planning Sketchfest with me, which means I can't actually watch anything I care about. What I have to do is like watch old episodes of Downton Abbey, quote unquote, watch old episodes of things because it makes me feel like I'm not working, kind of, but really I'm just still sitting on my computer on my laptop on the couch. It's like at 6 p.m., 6:30, I walk up from the computer on my desk, walk over to the couch, turn on the television,
continue working,
but tell myself like, now I'm on break.
If I had to organize what you're organizing right now, I feel like I would awaken every night in like terror, like screaming terror and cold sweats, and be like, I forgot to do that. Oh my God, constantly.
That is exactly what happens to me.
Yeah.
If I don't wake up thinking about a thing that I've forgotten with the festival, I just wake up from an anxiety dream anyway, which is essentially the same thing. So, but it's less useful because whatever it is I'm forgetting.
It didn't remind you what you need to write
down. Whatever it is I'm forgetting is still forgotten. But I wake up, like I had a dream the other night where I woke up sweating and like, I don't usually have nightmares at all, but I woke up sweating and panting, the whole cliche of like almost sitting up in bed because I had a dream that the War of the Worlds remake Tom Cruise movie Aliens were like out and about in Los Angeles and were chasing me, and I was gonna get zapped into a crisp.
Oh my God.
And I woke up and I was so scared, and then I was like, God damn it, why did it have to be such an embarrassing nightmare? Or like, it wasn't even a good movie.
Because you actually are so aware of it and seem to have such recall of it, do you actually remember, were your thoughts run for my life, or were they, what do I need to get? Because I feel like it would be more, for me, I'd be like, I need my external hard drive, and I need,
I think it was way more primal. I think it really was straight up terror. Like, it was definitely, you know what it is for me? This is actually getting too dark, too deep, but I'll be perfectly honest with you. I think it's just all the existential crisis stuff that has hit me in the last year or so, which I've talked about on the podcast before, that's just hit me in a different, deeper way than ever before. And so there's a lot of like, a lot of my nightmares involve like the wild despair of not being ready to die and or like the despair of other people being in pain or fearing for their death. And it's such of that particular panic is what most of my nightmares involve. It's just this feeling of like, no.
Oh my God.
Isn't that terrible?
So, that makes my insides hurt.
Oh,
that's
so
terrible.
I know. I don't know why it's hitting me so hard at this point in my life, but it just really is. Every story I hear about someone dying under like grim circumstances, like this week's This American Life, there was a story in it about this diver who died down in this cave alone, and I just like lose it as if it's my best friend. I start crying, like, well, no, oh, that's so scary.
Yeah, just the idea of being alone, being trapped, being lost, being
helpless. I'm afraid to see gravity because, like, I just, to me, that's like, oh, that's just what my nightmares have been. It's like people alone and afraid.
Oh my God, that's awful.
I know.
That's terrible. Awful.
Yeah, I could never watch any of the, like the CSI type shows or any sort of, like, whenever there is like kidnapped child alone in some box, terrified. It takes me like weeks to get it out of my like viscera. Like I literally like I carry just the concept that a child feels that kind of terror or is tormented in that way or put that but it is that same thing. Like, you know, I do think that now that we are pre-middle aged and the people around, you know, my husband turned 50 this past year. And it's that thing you're like, oh, wow, he's officially closer to the end than the beginning, right?
Yeah.
Like, maybe he'll live to 100, but if he does, he's not going to know who any of us are.
Yeah, he's not going to, last 10 years aren't like your first 10 years.
Right. But so it's that thing of, you know, once you get to that, you know, you're coming up on the halfway point and you're recognizing that, you know, as your parents get older and as, you know, my parents have had a lot of friends pass in the past like year or two. And I know that I'm so lucky that my parents are both alive. They're really healthy for their age and they're still very, you know, ambulatory and active and that kind of stuff. But I see like, oh, it's that generation. It's happening.
Yeah.
It is absolutely happening. And, you know, having friends lose their parents, I can't bear the idea of it. And I can't even imagine what it feels like for them.
Yeah.
Watching it, like knowing, oh, they're the last 2 years. I'm watching the health decline or the, you know, in hospice or whatever. It's awful.
I know. It's just such a dense feeling that, you know, I've talked about it before, but I just want to quickly again shout out, this is the most casual way of saying it, I want to shout out all the listeners out there who've gone through it, but, you know, every time I've had a guest on the podcast who's had like a real tragedy in their lives, lost someone in that way, and just friends of mine who are going through that, and, you know, I've had those kinds of losses myself, but I have not lost a parent yet, you know, I've not lost like a close family member. I've had friends take their lives, frankly, which is a whole other kettle of fish. It feels, it's very different. It's just a very different loss. It's profound. But in some weird way, because so much of our lives are about control or surrendering control or whatever, there's a different kind of darkness and a different kind of sorrow to the idea that you controlled and chose to end your life, but it's different than like a friend who has cancer. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's just different.
And here's the other thing is, you know, when you have a friend take their life, it's that thing where there's still that part of you that keeps expecting it to be wrong, the information to be wrong.
Yeah.
Whereas if you see somebody go through a long struggle with illness and you all know what the outcome is going to be, it feels so concrete and heavy and like it can't be undone. Like there's it's so, you know, when someone takes their own life, especially a young person or someone of our age, in our age bracket, you sometimes forget that they're gone because it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't
compute
the time. And you should, like, you could just be like, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice.
Or that they're just, to your point, that they just went somewhere else. Like, oh, they're not my friend anymore, but I'm sure they're fine somewhere. Like, there's a weird disconnect that happens. It's interesting you would say that, too, because it feels like, can it be a coincidence? And listen, I don't know because I'm also not an animal expert. And I know that sometimes we anthropomorphize animals in an inappropriate way. But with as much as that we do know about, you know, the way we see dogs' behavior if they lose a pack mate, or the way elephants behave, and so forth. It feels almost like it would almost make sense that the animal in us that doesn't have that same consciousness that we think our brains are constantly worrying with all these chemicals, da da da, and like, oh, we have such self awareness, but we're still animals, and there's like, no other species commits suicide because they're miserable or they're mentally impaired in some way.
Right.
And so it kind of makes sense that, like, on a very base level, the animal in us would just not compute it. Like, your head can tell you, like, yes, yeah, this is what happens.
That's what happens.
But that your heart or your bones somehow are just like, well, what is that?
Also, it's such a different grief because it doesn't, it's not that it doesn't have the same gravity, but it feels different because there's still part of you that isn't sure mm-hmm. about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're processing it, but you're also questioning it.
I totally agree.
You know, because I find that it's interesting. I just started seeing a therapist this past year for the first time, and I wish I had done it so much longer ago because I do find it so fascinating. I do love learning where my idiosyncrasies or my, you know, weird little tics or the things that I don't recognize about myself. I mean, we all have total blind spots, but a lot of times our blind spots are the things where we're like, come on, I don't really sound like that. What do you mean? I don't always talk in a clipped tone. And then right. like, oh, well, I really talk in a clipped tone.
Yeah.
Or the idea of seeing, I think I talked about this with you last time we were together about, you know, my father's anxiety and caution and how we'd be put through these drills of preparedness for the apocalypse and all that kind of stuff. And so I still do that thing where I...
That's right, because we talked about this idea of, like, your father coming into your two-story home and saying, Amira, there's a fire. You have two daughters. What do you do?
How do you get out?
And you thought you had the answer ready.
I had my fire ladder. I've got my extinguishers. I've got the whole thing wired. And then he's already gone around the house and checked and seen that all of my windows have been painted shut.
Oh, man.
They can't open, so I can't use my fire ladder anyway.
Which, by the way, and you as a writer and just, like, having such an amazing perspective on the world... I love the idea of, like, immediately what that can also represent. Like, you could so easily make that, you know, the bigger picture stuff. Like, okay, so you have all of these things and sometimes you can't see. Talk about blind spots, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That you just can't. It doesn't even occur to you that this one thing that you assume, you make the assumption, make like, the assumption, this part's...
I'm covered. That part's covered.
This is like, why would I even check that?
Right? But it is, so I do. I find that I operate at a level of anxiety because I was raised in... a household of, you know...
That's hard. It would be hard to not...
Preparedness or, you know, well, let's see all the different things that might happen and then let's have a head start on preparing for all of them for... So when when we find out what's happening, you already know what your plan is.
Right.
And so I find that even now, like if you were to go through my car right now, I have a snack basket with enough, like, you know, snacks for both the kids and myself for probably 3 days. And then I have a first aid kit, and then I have you know, a thing with, like, flares and a radio and blankets, and they're all in, like, cute little cases, so it doesn't look like I'm a hoarder living in my car.
Right.
But the thing that soothes me that I have found out through therapy is I can only relax when I feel like things are covered in case something happens.
And
then I can access other emotions And so this whole year, as I've been learning this about myself, I find grief, getting back to what we're talking about, I find grief striking me in the strangest of times, about the strangest of things, and about losses from so long ago that I didn't fully let wreck me because of that thing of it not seeming real. And then you're like 10 years out and you're like, well, it's real.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it just feels so, it's so heartbreaking and it's so life altering and it's so delayed.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if that's just my own processing, but just the idea of, for some reason, my body just hadn't fully accepted some of these things, like people who have taken their life or whatever, where you just don't, it just doesn't add up. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't, and so your grief is...
It doesn't fit. Like, it literally doesn't fit into the life that you were living when it happened. And so we all kind of, like... We so meticulously, it's like sort of have our puzzle that we've put together and there aren't any missing pieces. Yeah. So if a piece like that just drops in on the puzzle, you're like, oh, shuffle that away.
Yeah.
Like, let me just scoot that piece out of the way. I'll have to figure out where that fits in later. and then we don't, and then suddenly somewhere a little puzzle piece opens up, and it's like, drop, it plops in, and you're like,
oh, wow.
But like, this is like a puzzle of an ocean, and this is like fire. What is this piece? Why does this piece fit right now?
Exactly.
Oh, it's so crazy.
It is. It's really, really crazy. And it is, for someone like me, I don't know if you're anything like this, but I'm not super great to be in romantic relationships with, and you can ask my husband about this.
All right, I already have a theory about this,
but
that I am to share with you.
I am out of sight, out of mind. I'm not absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Same.
So when total he same. Is out on the road,
we're efficient and we're self sufficient, and we're not. Our issue doesn't tend to be like enmeshment or codependency.
Yeah, but so it's that thing of, you know, when he goes away to do stand up on the road or whatever, I literally have to remind myself, oh, you should, it's been a few days, you should call him and make him feel like you give a shit for a dollar. But it just, it's off my radar. And so it's that thing of like, you know, 10 years later, somebody's been off my radar for so long, out of sight, out of mind. Then all of a sudden something triggers. Mm. And all of a sudden these feelings of grief or loss or sadness about something that I haven't thought about in forever and didn't fully process when it happened because it didn't make sense and it didn't feel right and it didn't fit and it felt open-ended and unsure and unclear. So I've been having this crazy year where out of nowhere, something, I'll read something, I'll hear a song, something will trigger me, it'll be weather, a smell, something, and all of a sudden I am overcome with like sobbing grief about, and it's, I mean, it's a great catharsis, and you go, well, I'm clearly accepting that thing that I've been carrying, that I didn't even know I was carrying.
Yeah.
Right?
And the other thing that's interesting about that, that's hard for someone like me, is that I have the same kinds of experiences, and yet I do feel like I have I think I have immediate access to my feelings when things are happening. So I also feel like it gets tricky because if you're somebody who just is totally closed off and you know yourself to be that way and you've kind of accepted it, like I think there's a sort of like, we still have the kind of cultural cliche of like a stalwart man who gets to say, you know, look, I just don't really, I don't do that. I don't feel like that. You know, at least they kind of are acknowledging to the world and themselves, like, look, I just don't feel stuff, you know, whether or not that ends up being true in the long run. But then you have someone like me who's like, I feel everything all the time. Then I think I've gotten that out of the way. Like, right. I've had all the feelings. And, and to your point,
I'm just one big nerve.
Yeah. And to take it back kind of to, even just to take it back to what you were saying about the haircut, like that is the work of someone who thinks they're processing shit, right? I mean, that is the work of, you certainly were processing some stuff.
Yeah.
Because you had the presence of mind to go, no, I am cutting my hair. My hair is a reminder of the person that made these decisions and is making new decisions and new choices. I am working through this process. This is a representation of that. Now I can move forward with my life.
Right.
So if you're doing it in some places and not in others, then it really is a surprise when you get hit with something. You're like,
I
think about stuff. What? Where's the, hello? Didn't I earn the right to not be hit with something off guard? And again, it goes back to control. It's like, well, if I can control my emotional intensity and my emotional response off the cuff, maybe I'll just help be getting this, I'm controlling it by getting this feeling out of the way right when I'm supposed to. And then it will never come when it's not supposed to.
Exactly. Because that would be such an inconvenience. I don't really have time for that.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it is. It is all that thing. And that is something that comes from, as you were saying about, you know, the kind of women we are. I mean, I was looking at some studies recently. The biggest demographic in this country is what I'm calling independent women, which is what I'm renaming single women, independent women.
Okay. I accept that wholeheartedly.
Because independent women, who are women, are self-sufficient and supporting themselves, it covers all races.
Right.
Right? If you've got the right chromosomes and you know, what have you, you can be an independent woman. It doesn't matter your race, religion, creed, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what my point was with this. But the thing about it is, independent women, because we're in charge of our daily life and our own bills and our wallets and when we spend money and when we save money and the decisions we make, we have this illusion of control.
Mm-hmm.
Like we think we are controlling things when in fact our need to control things is actually sort of suffocating the opportunity for things to play out in its natural form.
I love what you're saying right now.
Do you know what I mean?
It really resonates for me. Yeah.
It, and a mother especially, you know, I mean, even though I'm married and, you know, we have a life as a family, I still am somebody that works and earns my living and
you're terrifically independent. And the first person to say that would be Greg.
But you know what I mean?
Yeah,
but absolutely. I make my own choices. And because I have children, I do have a real tight hold on the illusion of control where I'm constantly... And because of the household I grew up in, but it is because of that thing. A lot of times I cut things off at the pass and try to process them or control what it's going to feel like or what it's going to be or how long it's going to last, as opposed to just letting it happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so I end up having to do it twice.
That totally makes sense to me. The other thing that's interesting to me is, and sorry guys, I'm just responding to a very quick thing. Sorry guys. Sketch fest. is this idea of like, because you don't come off, I have a couple things I want to ask you a question about your upbringing as well. Because you don't come off as being afraid of a mess. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't come over to your house and, you know, Amira guys lives in a beautiful home with a aforementioned family. Her daughters are like from an outside perspective of the time that I've been lucky enough to spend with them, the sweetest, most organically, seemingly well-behaved, just lovely people. They're just lovely people. Like, they make my heart hurt. Like, Amira has
seen me. They really are. They're lovely.
I've literally clutched my chest over numerous things that they've said. So this thing where parents are like, oh, she said the cutest thing the other day. And you're like, I mean, this is going to be cute, but it's going to be as cute as what everyone else's parent, like other parent thinks is cute that their child says. But like, I have literally just seen them behave in a way that I'm like, it hurts every part of my body in the best way. And then I'm just like, oh God, I love these girls.
They are pretty spectacular.
And so they're
I can't take credit.
They certainly don't seem, nor would you need to out anything that is the opposite of what I'm saying on this podcast, but they certainly don't come off as being like super tightly wound, or they're super, you know, anxious, or they're super controlling, or, you know, they need that they have a sense that something horrible could happen at any moment. I mean,
they don't.
They're just your whole house is just like very warm and loose. And if I dropped a bowl of cereal and it shattered everywhere, you would not make me feel like,
oh my God, no.
Okay, let's get this clean. You know what I'm saying? So
my house is constantly piles of things coming in and out. And, you know, we do the best we can to keep it seemingly. Yeah.
I just wanted to point that out, because I think part of the things that you're saying could create this bubble of an idea that, you know, the control thing, that there's a sense of like real order and like rigorous
right.
this and that. And that is not,
you know, it's
they're,
not,
they're coming it from different places. It seems.
Yeah. It's not, it doesn't manifest itself or show itself in, how I raise my kids or our home or stuff like that. But it is the amount of, I mean, if you, again, to go back to my car, like if you looked in my car, there's a bag with lap desks and textbooks and all the supplies for homework.
Amazing.
And then there are the dance bags that, I mean, every day I have to go look at what 4 dance classes each of my daughters are doing, and then what they have to, this one is booty shorts and half top hip hop shoes. And then this one's doing lyrical and point today. And so it's that thing of there's such an organization and I guess it's preparedness. And so I feel that the preparedness is my illusion of control.
Mm-hmm. And so this is the question that I wanted to ask, which is that you spoke about your dad and kind of what he set up for you guys. Where did that come from for him, if you know? And B, did anything actually ever happen to your family that would sort of...
Nothing has ever happened, but I do believe it sort of comes from the idea of if you're prepared, you won't need to be prepared. Mm-hmm. But if you're unprepared, the shit's going to fly. It's like the idea that like I have pepper spray on my keychain, so I will never need it.
Yeah.
But if I didn't need it, if I didn't have it,
somehow
I would need it.
Yeah.
It's just that way of thinking.
Yeah. And where was the, just remind me where this was.
Where I grew up?
When you grew up, yeah.
I grew up 7 miles outside of Washington, D.C., and yeah. Here's where I think it came from. And this is just a sweeping guess. Mm-hmm. My parents both worked for the government.
Yeah.
My father was a diplomat, and so he went to a lot of third world countries, and he actually spent 3 years in Cairo when I was in high school. And so he saw a lot of different shit go down, mm-hmm. and he saw a lot of different cultures and a lot of different situations that you and I will never see, just based on what the cultures of the land are and how women are treated or how violence is acceptable or what have you. And so I think that to a degree, as a father, it struck him in a way of always wanting to be able to protect his kids even if he wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mother worked for
the agency.
And
so exciting.
And I don't think she was a spy or anything, but I think when you're working in the government in whatever capacity, you are privy to attitudes and goings-ons that kind of stick with you, and you go, you get that sort of, you grow that sort of thing of like, I need to be prepared.
Yeah.
Because it's a wily world and we're all protected from it. You know, the government makes it seem like we're all pretty safe most of the time. But I think that when you're inside the walls, you get a different feeling that it actually takes more to keep everyone safe than we think. Mm-hmm. And so that is my guess as to why I grew up in a manner. And, you know, my dad did travel a lot, so I think he wanted us all to feel like, you know, were there a home invasion, we have our escape route and we have our plan and everyone has a baseball bat under their bed and, mm-hmm. you know, or whatever it is. And I think it was to give him peace of mind because he did travel so much.
It's interesting too what people consider like the sort of varying degrees of appropriateness for disaster preparedness, yeah. too. Like that, like for one person, having a baseball bat under the bed seems like paranoid.
Right.
And for another person, it doesn't seem like enough.
Right.
And for another person, a bomb shelter feels like the way to go with yeah. like sundries for weeks. And for somebody else, it's like, well, yeah. listen, I have some bottled water in my garage.
Right.
And it's just so hard to.
But that's the thing, is like, it is personal anxiety level. Mm-hmm. And it's the, what is the thing that makes me feel good?
Yeah.
And safe and covered. Because it is all about safety, ultimately.
Yeah. That's another question, too, for you, for talking, I mean, a little bit about your adolescence, too, and then how it kind of spills into as you get older. And again, I just keep going back to this touch point of Oprah's life class and cutting your hair. And I still want to talk more about the life class, and I want to talk more about your books. Ay-yay-yay. There's never enough time with Amira Barrett. But how does that manifest itself in the way you have friendships as an adult, or I mean, as an adolescent, not so much as an adult, but because I think we all sort of start to get to know each other, ourselves and each other better in different and deeper ways as we get older and accept more things about ourselves. But as an adolescent, when we have like zero, like all we do is think about ourselves, uh-huh. and yet we have zero understanding of what that means. Like, how does that sort of, does that kind of play out too in like protecting yourself in relationships, protecting yourself in friendships? Or did you feel that you were coming from a place of like solidarity because your dad kind of taught you to be self-sufficient and stuff, to where you could be vulnerable and still feel safe? I know that's a really abstract question.
It is. And I completely understand what you're saying. And here's the thing, is I think because of that, because I sort of had the feeling of being so capable, or not, or even if it wasn't capable, not helpless. Like I'm not afraid of a challenge. I'm not afraid of trying. I'm not afraid of trying to figure something out, because I was raised in that way. So before I just go, I don't know, or call the guy, I do try. I mean, like this morning I went to, one of my headlights is out, And I keep driving around without my headlight and going, well, I need to get to the car dealership to deal with this. But I also feel like I can just do this. This can't be that hard.
Right.
So I went to Pep Boys this morning and I talked to the gentleman and he said, it's like $10. We can do it right now. I said, great. And so he opened the hood and he pulled out my headlight. I was like, that's all it is. It was literally pulling two metal sticks
like
up and
changing
then the whole
a light bulb.
Thing comes out.
Yeah.
And then you unscrew it. And I was like, he goes, do you really want to know about this? I said, I do. I go, I don't know that I'll ever have to do it myself, but I like the idea of knowing how to do it.
Sure.
You know, and so I think that in growing up, because I had that kind of confidence of, I might not do it right, but I could definitely MacGyver whatever situation mm-hmm. to last me till I can get to whoever can do it right. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I attracted people that were probably more vulnerable than I was/am. Because I am sort of... because I am independent and because I am capable and because I am, I think I carry myself in a way where...
You make other people feel safe.
I think I make other people feel safe. And so I think I attracted people that were more vulnerable. And I've had, you know, incredible friendships. But interestingly, I'm not really in touch with anybody I grew up with. Mm. The oldest friend I'm in touch with is my college roommate, who I still am in fair, you know, we could talk a few times a year and I love her to death. But I tended to, as a young person, like the relationships were not really deeply rooted for me.
Mm-hmm. And you, I think... Well, gosh, maybe you were just like super self-sufficient. Like maybe there is a vulnerability exchange where maybe it was something a little deeper or could have been for right. them, but maybe you were like, well, listen, you're great, but you know, if this doesn't, you know, if you moved away tomorrow, listen, I'd be fine. Siblings?
I have an older brother.
Your brother, right. Yeah. And so was your brother the same way? And was he the same way?
My brother had the same... like handful of friends, I think through like junior high and high school, and then he had the same group of friends in college, and he's still very close to all, he's still close to his college friends. I think he's still in touch like in a Facebook-y way with his high school friends. Mm-hmm. My brother and I are very different in that he's a much better person than I am. But he is he's almost of a different time. Like he's almost from the Downton Abbey time. Like his regard for women and his regard for manners and the thoughtfulness and seriousness he walks through his life with is kind of unheard of. Like he was never like someone that would just like have one night stands in college or that. He just is a very sensitive and feeling person. Wow. And I think that his kind of masculinity is so barren from a lot of the men that I certainly grew up with or experienced. The idea, you know, he wasn't an adolescent for a really long time the way I think a lot of guys are.
Still are.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But you know, like he and I don't know if that's because of having my father as a model or what, but he definitely was always a let me do that for you, opening the door, you know, treating you like a lady and like the chivalrous kind of stuff.
Sure.
And I think that his regard of women was always very high. So he didn't.
That's
you
lovely.
Know, I look at the kind of guys I hung out with in college or when I was, you know, a teen or even growing up, and it was all very self-oriented and how far can I get? What can I get away with? And that kind of thing. And it wasn't really about feelings mm-hmm. or a connection. It was like, can I see your boob? Can I catch that? But you know what I mean? Whereas my brother was really about connection.
Yeah.
And knowing somebody. And so there's that weird thing of I don't know what his relationships were like, but I feel like his relationships were probably with more like-minded people that were more thoughtful.
Yeah, and like more friendship. Like there was found a foundation of friendship too, which is interesting. And I have to say, thank God you didn't have that, because I don't think that you would have the perspective that you do, that you now are able to share with the books. Obviously, It's Just a Fucking Date being the most recent one. Mm-hmm. And then also...
It's called A Break It Because It's Broken In.
I mean, you knew I was gonna bring that one up. But seriously, guys, I gotta tell you. I mean, It's Just a Fucking Date is great. It's the timing of it works out that you will benefit from this whether or not you're in a relationship or not. But because everything that Amira has written is also just sort of about, like, I think the overall scope of who you are as a person and how to take better care of yourself emotionally and in relationships with anyone. But just timing wise for me, like, I read It's Called A Breakup Because It's Broken, that she wrote with her husband, Greg, after a breakup. And so I was, I mean, I've said this to everyone. I feel like I've said it on the podcast numerous times. If you're wondering, oh, that's who she was talking about. That's Amira. She's doing the podcast right now.
Hello.
But this idea that, like, you can have the access. You can have, like, I feel that I have the access to Amira that I'm super spoiled by, because when you read these books, you're like, oh, I really wish this person were in my day-to-day life. And she actually is in my life, not as much as I would like. But you too can have a sliver of that. It's a very sizable sliver, I'll say, in these books, because you just feel, I can't even express to you. And my friend who went through a very painful breakup, who's like a very, like, super self-confident man who felt like it always the relationships ended mutually, or he broke up with someone and he just got his heart smashed, and he read it and got even more out of it than I did, because he was more devastated by his breakup than I had been by mine, which was sizable. And it just is, like, it's just funny exactly where it should be without disrespecting the pain you're in. I just can't say enough good things about it.
Thank,
like,
you
guys,
so
are
much.
Just so great about, it's not something that you can, I don't think it's something you can learn. Just tonally, you guys just organically seem to know, and I don't know, because I didn't write the book, so maybe it was like back and forth, like, is this a bad time for us to make this joke in this book? And if you were sensitive about that, then even more power to you. But there is something so effortless about the way you communicate, Amira, both sitting in this room with me and also on the page, that it just doesn't feel overworked. It just feels, that's what's so amazing about you, is that it feels like this every time. It feels like you're sitting down to coffee with someone who's speaking off the top of her head, yet it's a book that you have access to whenever you need it. I just think it's amazing. I'm,
oh my
such
God,
a huge fan.
You're like
fan.
The nicest human being in the world.
No, that's, it's that, so that, true.
That's the nicest thing anyone's ever
really
said.
Really hard
about.
To do. That's really hard to do. You know, you read these, you can read little slivers of other, even like sometimes I'll get like an email forwarded from someone who's like a life coach who's, uh-huh. you know, sends me something, is like, oh, don't you agree with Cheryl on this one? And they're lovely. They're lovely, like the way it's written. But ultimately, I'm very aware that I am reading something from a life coach,
right.
who's, she has made it her career to just make you feel better or give you advice that will help you grow your life some way. And it feels very on the page to me. And I think that's what's so special about what you do, is I've never come across anybody else who just makes it feel like I just called you and I'm like, listen, you don't know me, but this is my problem. You're like, oh, let me tell you this. It just feels, it's just so casual and special. So,
well, thank you. I mean, I have to say, when, you know, this is just something that we sort of stepped into. It wasn't something we set out to do, but for whatever reason, I have made enough mistakes in my own life and I'm analytical enough in my own nature, or anxious from my upbringing, or whatever it is, that I've, you know, really looked at it from all the different angles and, you know, what have you, and I don't know why I have the information or why it comes out so easily. And I, on it, and that's such a nice thing of what you said about the books, because literally I feel like they must be, I always think they must be so difficult to read because I blather on incessantly and I feel like I say things seven different ways and you're like, yeah, got it.
No,
got
it twice. There is don't no such thing. No, because we that's so because funny. When we're hurting and when we're trying to break a behavior, like, you know, and this exists also for he's just not that into you, which a lot of people are familiar with. It was right. something that Greg fell into out of the Sex and the City phenomenon. But as evidenced by my friend who just went through this breakup, who I was able to see it from the outside opposed to seeing my own process of recovering. You fucking have to hear something 17 different ways, different times. And if there's a way to finesse it so that it just seems like it's getting re-said, but no one's saying, and now I need to say this to you again because you're stupid right now. Like we all are.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's so funny because, you know, when we went to do this life class, which was an incredible experience, and you know, there's a lot of when you do something with Harpo and Oprah, there's a lot of pre-production where there's a lot of phone calls and conference calls and trying to discuss what information are we going to try to extract from the book and talk to people about it and how do we want to present it and do we want it to be this way or that way, whatever. So by the time you're live, you know, you think you know what's going to happen and then it goes off the rails immediately. Like it just goes rogue very quickly because people are excited and they want to ask questions and Oprah's there and they can't believe she's in the flesh and she's as pretty in person as they think she's going to be.
Sure.
And so once it's like, well, you want to say something, what do you have to say? And then it kind of goes all over the place and you lose it. And it just has its own energy.
Yeah.
But the thing that really struck me so profoundly, because the audience was filled with single women and a handful of single men that they had pre-interviewed and done taped pieces to give the men's perspective on dating and behaviors in dating and what freaks them out or what turns them off or what makes them decide you're a slut and not going to be the mother of their children or whatever the stuff is. And so there's these women in the audience and they're, you know, a lot of what this book is saying is nothing is better than something as opposed to something is better than nothing. I think a lot of women reduce themselves or they accept less or they settle or they whatever, because they feel like if they don't, they'll get nothing.
Yeah.
And they don't want to have nothing. But, you know, when you're in the sea of women who have questions and are in pain and are confused and are frustrated and aren't getting the life they want, and they're all saying, but you don't know what it's like. We have to compete with porn and we're expected to have sex on the first date and we're expected. That's what guys expect because of porn and blah, 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 blah. And it's incredible to me how women have lost perspective on being self-possessed or thinking for themselves as opposed to going, well, that's what's expected to me by that guy that likes porn.
Right.
And then they are accommodating that expectation so they don't get rejected or they don't get nothing. And it blew my mind because I was like, this one woman, she was, I would say, my age or a couple years older, and she was divorced, and she was saying how she doesn't understand, you know, nobody calls you on the phone and asks you out and people just text. And I'm always asking my daughter, how do I decipher this thing? And even the guys are like, you know, with texting, you can just text, hey, you want to hang out? And then if they say no, it doesn't feel like the same rejection as if you asked. And this conversation going back and forth about, you know, men like it because they don't have to put themselves on the line and women don't like it because they don't know how, what it means and how to play it. And I just said to her, text back when he says, do you want to hang out? Or what are you up to? You text back, call me for the answer. Like, it's so simple.
Right.
But you forget how to think in a pure and simple manner when you're all revved up with insecurity and confusion and trying to... there's like this weird game of sexual chess happening in dating and texting and sexting and relationships and all that kind of stuff. And people are, because women are analytical, they're all trying to figure out, well, what's the move and what's the thing, as opposed to going, I would like you to call me on the phone.
Yeah.
And want to hear the sound of my voice. And then I'd like to decide if I like the sound of your voice or if I find you at all interesting enough to then have a coffee with you. But, you know, women are, they've forgotten that it's about them. It's not about him and what his expectations are, or that he likes porn and so he want, you should fuck him on the first date. It's, how do you like to be treated?
Yeah.
What makes you feel good? And then you go to them, hey, I appreciate what you're putting out. However, this is not, that's not how I roll.
Yeah.
And it's as easy as that. And then if they don't respond or they don't like that, well, you just dodged the bullet. Like, you saved yourself the frustration of having to find out he's not the guy, because he's already told you, I'm not the guy.
And two, like, to, you know, I mean, everything you're saying makes such perfect sense. And it really is just a matter of, yeah, it's interesting. I worry about this stuff sometimes because I do feel like we're in this kind of weird place where we all knew, I mean, and guys, I know I have tons of male listeners on the show. And so, you know, you're welcome into this conversation offline later, you know, let me know what you think and stuff. But I feel like we're in this really precarious place as women where it's like, and this has been happening for a while now, where we all think we're further along than we are, which is kind of the most dangerous place to be at all. Because, you know, in the 60s and 70s and even the 80s to a degree, there's so many loud voices and it's so clear. It's so clear. And it's the same with, I mean, it's not this, obviously I'm not going to get into a conversation where I liken racism to sexism, to ageism, to this, to that, to that. They all are, they deserve their separate conversations. But just in terms of like, there's this, like, what's on the surface is so different from when you could look at a surface and go, well, that's clearly wrong. Now it's the surface is looking pretty good. A lot of independent women, a lot of women making as much as men, not all, but like a lot, you know, a lot of women feeling, you know, books like Lean In, where it's like, you can do everything. There's a lot of good stuff happening on the surface. And is that surface dangerous because underneath that surface is a generation of women who feel that they have to have sex with someone on the first date and no one's talking about it because we're all liberated feminists now and best not make noise because everyone's going to be like, ew, feminism, that old thing.
That old chestnut.
Well, I think we're past that now, everybody. But, P.S. give me a blowjob because I like porn.
Right. But it's that thing of, you know, sex changes everything. It doesn't, we can't, we have to, I know we like to pretend like we're, you know, well, I like having sex and so I did it and I'm in control of the situation, but it doesn't change the fact that if you have sex with somebody, then they get over your name, it's going to hurt your feelings.
And also, like, or, like, who are these still emotional creatures? Guys are super messy too. Like, who's, like, you guys who listen to the podcast, you know, I get notes from you. It's extremely clear to me that you're not the bad guy and girls are the victim, that there are men out there going, I don't know how to do this either.
Right.
I would love for her to call me and ask me to da 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 da. I would love to, you know, I would love to have someone tell me that, like, it's okay that I don't really like porn, or that I love porn, but I don't want to love porn.
Right.
I don't, you know what I mean? Like, all of those conversations that men don't get to have either in terms of communication, and like, how do we raise everyone up and not just have it be, well, we can teach men to be different because they're going to, you know, we're going to, if we meet their expectations, then they're going to expect that and so forth, so on and so forth. It's also like, well, how do men kind of come on board to this idea of like asking what they really want and not what they think they're supposed to want because of what's around them too?
Right. Well, I think, I mean, it's such an individual thing. And I think that, you know, when you're, if you're offered something, you then consider it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think quite often, you know, men and women in whatever sort of dating proximity or hookup proximity or relationship proximity, like something sexual is offered relatively quickly. And if it is then accepted or the thing, you know, it just derails. It's like having dessert first. Why not? Great. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that because there is access and it is acceptable and people are willing, we no longer take the time to go, what would I really like?
Yeah.
Would I know I want to have sex with that person, But would I like to get to know them first? Or would I like to spend some time together? Or would I like to see a movie with them first? Or like, you've already decided that it's yes or no.
Yeah.
Sexually.
Yeah.
And so you just go to that part because you know that that's on the docket of things you would like to check out.
Right.
But it is that thing of you know, I think that when men are offered sex or they have a game, a willing partner quickly, it's really just, you know, biologically and evolutionarily difficult to turn down.
Mm-hmm.
And then they find themselves in a situation that maybe isn't the situation. Not that they didn't like having sex with that person, but that thing of like, well, oh, now things are different than if I had just had dinner.
Yeah.
And then gone, I really like you, or I don't know about this. There's not a thing here.
Yeah.
So it's that thing of we're not, I think individually both men and women are not actually exploring. They're giving into the desire or the impulse or the fun.
You're speaking not just evolutionarily and biologically, but we're also constantly, we potentially fighting against everything moving at a breakneck pace anyway. It's yeah. like, why would I take it slow in a relationship if I can immediately get this answer on my phone when I search on something online, when I can get a pair yeah. of shoes that I wanted yeah. the next day, when I can, you know, when I'm expected to respond to someone's text immediately. Like yes. everything
escalated.
Is so, yeah. So to suddenly look at something that is attached to so much emotion and physical energy as something like sex and relationships and say, you know what, that's going to be a place in my life where I do slow way down and have patience
right.
and take some time to kind of take a step back and meditate on it. That's a huge decision to make in this fast-paced world.
And quite honestly, like not to reduce sex in any way, but like I can't control myself around a bread basket, right? So I and that's just bread.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I think we can agree for the most part, sex is
better than bread.
And so I get that it's hard. Like yeah. I'm not trying to be like, you guys should all, you know, in my day we used to, but it just is a thing of impulse control is difficult for everybody
mm-hmm.
for many different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Bread baskets, absolutely. Sleeping, like it just is a matter of, and here, the reason I bring out the bread basket is I love bread. It comes in a basket and I can't fucking believe it. And it's like, they've never made butter where I live. And it is that thing where, yeah. but then I feel shitty later and I do regret my choice.
And P.S. the stakes.
Even though it felt great at the time. Yeah,
and the stakes of eating a piece of bread versus the stakes of making a sexual choice with yes. a partner. It just is different.
It just is different, but it is, and it is that thing of
it's the same, but like heightened.
It's heightened, and it is that thing of like if I eat too much bread, and then I have like a gluten baby making my stomach out to here, right. and I feel like crap, and I have stomach cramps, and my jeans don't fit.
Yeah,
those are my repercussions. And if also, I sleep with somebody yeah. too quickly, yeah. and then things get weird, or I don't behave right after we've had sex, and then that turns the other person off of me, or makes them feel shame, or anything that is negative, whatever that emotion is, self-conscious, whatever. I've possibly wrecked the opportunity to be with someone that might be a meaningful person in my life.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a bigger repercussion, but it is like I get not being able to control your impulses.
Oh my God, I experience totally it daily, do too. Yeah. No judgment, right? no judgment at all. But and to your point, I will say this. I will go ahead and continue to use the breadbasket scenario because I think it's so effective. But because of what you just said about the feelings of shame, and I think that is such a huge, even like shame and regret kind of going hand in hand, or regret maybe being a longer lasting version of shame.
Right.
But it's like, shouldn't we all like the sort of present self, the id, the whatever, and like the kind of superego, if you want to look at it that way, it's like, let's set up a mirror for success so that on one day she refuses the bread altogether. And or on the second or the next day, she eats all the bread. But you know what? Fuck it. Because she knows she takes care of herself. She gets to eat all the bread one day because she doesn't do it every day.
Yeah.
And she's not going to beat herself up about it. It's the third choice of I'm going to both do it and feel bad about it that is not going to set you up for success with choices in the future. And I would say parallel with sexuality. If you are making a choice that you feel good about, that is a reflection of who you really are, mm-hmm. that you're not going to beat yourself up over, then that's your choice and do it and be comfortable in that decision and don't regret it and don't feel shame.
Right.
If you're going to make a decision that is then going to create a spiral of shame, you're not going to be a happier, better person the very next time you get asked that to do the same thing. So that's where you sort of start to build what your character is going to be around those kinds of things, like having sex with someone too early or having sex with someone because you want them to like you more because sometimes it seems like that works or what have you.
Right. And here's the thing is like, you know, I will make that breadbasket mistake over and over again. I absolutely will, and I won't feel good about it anytime I do it. And I will even have the foresight to know this is going to end badly, and I'm going to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. There's enough thought that goes into the thing.
But you must be forgiving yourself to some degree.
Yes, yes. And I make up for it in other areas of my life, in my nutrition, in my health, in my whatever. But with the thing about this impulses of sex and sleeping with somebody too soon and then having shame or regret and then negotiating with yourself, well, you've already done it before, so it's okay if you do it again and it's already a line that's been crossed and blah, 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 blah. The thing about it is it is something that can bite you in the ass. Like if you're somebody that is relatively loose with your standards for when you have sex or who you have sex with. And that's up to you. Like everyone has their own set of standards of this is where I live and this is where I'm comfortable. And sometimes you dip below those standards. Like, no, I really like, I'm comfortable there and I want to get back to there. But when you meet Mr. Right or Mr. Forever or the guy I want to be with forever, you don't want there to be the opportunity for someone to whisper in his ear, oh, that girl bangs fucking everyone.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's bad that you banged everyone. It's that now this person has a different perception of his experience with you.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer just having his experience and his reaction. He's now having a little like there's a loop playing in his head of, well, and all of a sudden things like that. The things that can come back to haunt you that can be a totally different part of your life. Like they can haunt you in a really profound way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, I like to tell my kids, you know, and I can't remember where we put the, I'm sure we put this in some book or something or another, but the idea of like, no college admissions director is ever going to say, I loved that picture of you naked in the hot tub with all those guys with your boob in the red cup.
Uh-huh.
That is what made me accept you, is that in your essay.
Oh, no.
But you know what I mean? It's like, it's because it is out there. Because the choices you make are tweeted and Instagrammed and texted and Facebooked and da-da-da, it's no longer your private business.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that aspect of it that makes it all more amplified.
Mm-hmm.
Like if I don't, my eating the breadbasket is not noteworthy on Twitter or Facebook or among friends.
Right.
It's not noteworthy.
Right.
But getting laid will always be noteworthy to men.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we're being very gender specific and sort of straight relationships in this case because, well, for one thing, I would say that is something that you feel more comfortable speaking to. So if we were I don't know, I think a lot of this plays out regardless.
Yes.
But I suddenly got like very PC and wanted to be like, listen, nobody's saying that the only relationships that count are straight relationships.
You know what it is? I find that I only know from myself and my relationships growing up or my relationships with my girlfriends when I was single and and out in the sexual world and not monogamous relationships. Like our sex conversations died down pretty quickly. Did you sleep with him? I did. Was it good? Yeah. What are we ordering? Like it was pretty quick. There's not like I think it's a different world now because there's a lot of lady porn now and mm-hmm. 50 Shades of Grey. And so, you know, women are opening up the dialogue of the sexual experience and giving it more color and adjectives and play by play. But when I grew up, it was a pretty narrow conversation, whereas the opposite side, the boy conversation of them, it was more of a tell it to me slow, give it to me play by play.
Yeah.
And so I think that is just my version in my head is that I think the male conversation about sex, because it's more in their mind all the time. I feel like it's a longer conversation than you telling your girlfriend, "I slept with that guy."
Yeah.
"You did? Do you feel okay about it? Are you cool? Was it great?" Like I feel like, or maybe I'm hopeful to think that the girlfriends are like, "Was it good? Yeah. Do you feel good about it? Yeah. Great. We're good." Or
yeah.
Like, I feel like it maybe comes from more of emotional support rather than yeah. describe as cock.
But having said No, I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but I will say very quickly that like one of the reasons that Sex and the City, I think, reached so many women because there was frank discussion about sex there and why it's happening more now is less about, you know, being like raunchy about it all, but like it did help me a lot to have with very specific girlfriends more explicit conversations because I felt great to know like, "Oh, this happened to you too,"
right.
Or "Oh, I didn't like, oh, you didn't like that. You like it," because like that is very helpful because it is the opposite of finding out about sex via porn. You know, it's like, "Oh, this is a person I trust telling me this thing that she also was into," or like, "Why I probably won't like this thing that this guy wants to do with me," right. Or whatever.
Yes.
You know, it is nice to have the freedom of information
but
way.
But
I don't go talking about that to someone else. You know what I'm saying?
No, like, you bring up a really interesting point because it is true. It is. I do think this Sex and the City broke down a huge barrier with that and how women talk about sex and are comfortable talking about sex or removing the shame element or judgment element of being able to be forthcoming with like, "Yeah, I fucked him."
Yeah.
As opposed to playing cat and mouse with it. Like, "We're still thinking about it. We're still talking about," you know, because for a long time, there was an element of, you know, women not feeling like they could be honest about their sex lives without receiving judgment.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if it was silent and masked with an empathetic face or what have you. But it is that thing. Like, I do think that, you know, it all comes back to, you know, what we talked about earlier is the idea of having enough presence when you're in the situation to go, what do I actually want?
Yeah.
Or what... If I have to decide right now, is this someone that I might want to date versus just want to fuck?
Right.
Like, but it is. It's just having the presence to try to do a little, is it?
We could all benefit, you know? I think, in general, too, from kind of getting better at asking ourselves what we really want and what are, you know, that whenever I see or hear anything about this idea of people trying to get back in touch with their instincts and going with their gut and stuff, I'm always like, more power to you and best of luck with that, because we are so far away from like the sense of like, ultimately, I just knew that this was a wrong decision, but I just ignored it and I went, you know what I mean?
You have a moral compass, like that twinge in you that goes, you probably shouldn't do this. Like, you know it, but you choose to ignore it. And in all aspects of life, whether it's, you know, running the yellow when it's about to turn red or what, like there is that thing. And then you hope you don't get caught for all of it, or hope it doesn't come back to haunt you as a mistake.
Yeah.
Hope you get away with it. Because we all do have a moral compass, and it's how loud that voice is turned up inside of you, and whether or not you are like, "Not now."
Yeah.
Or like, "Oh, yes, I know. Okay. I'll listen. But I really would like to, but I won't."
I know.
But it is. I know.
And okay, here's what I want to do. I want to round it off with like, it's funny because we really didn't talk that much about teen stuff, but I just actually, even if we hadn't already had such a long conversation about teen stuff between the two of us before, I feel like there's just so much to say about all of this stuff that I feel completely and 100% fine with it if you do. But for the MASH game, I'm basing it more on the conversation that we've had and less on like knowing a ton of stuff about your adolescence. But
okay.
I would love to start with three, you know, MASH. So you know yep. that we're going to narrow down.
I'm excited about it.
But give me three perfect first dates. Like just give me three cool, like great fun things that would be kind of a great first date situation.
Can I quickly ask, is it on any budget or is
yeah,
it
on any budget?
On any budget.
Fantasy land. Total fantasy
three
world.
Great first dates. Okay. Semifinals day at any of the four Grand Slam tennis tournaments.
Amazing. Love it.
The Musée d'Orsay.
Great. Right? Great.
Airfare included. A nice little jaunt.
Yeah.
Over the pond. And I always love Shakespeare in the Park here at Griffith Park.
You know what? I've never gone.
Have you never? It's such a delight.
I make plans to every year and somehow I never manage.
Every time I go, I'm always like, I wish I went to this more.
Yeah. I did go to one up at
Enjoy.
Whatever that is, Barnsdall. They have the outdoor Shakespeare at that Barnsdall Art Park or whatever. This is great. Okay. Three places. This is very similar to first date, but three places that you wish you could just like blink your eyes and you and the girls would be you and your daughters, like a great fun, just the girls, like anywhere. You could go anywhere. Could even be not in real life. It could be like, you know what? The girls love blank cartoon.
The girls love Portlandia. They love Portlandia.
Right. Instant, you guys instantly pop into Portlandia. So, that is hilarious.
My God. That makes them so, there's
oh
nothing
God,
they
I
like
wish
more
that were true.
Than Portlandia.
Oh, I love it.
And always Hawaii. We go to Hawaii. My family's right. in Hawaii and our friends are in Hawaii. And it's a place where it's very much the happiest version of us.
Love it.
And I think Paris. The girls really want to go to Paris.
Yeah, that's going to be really
And it's on my
really
mind
great.
Since you just went.
I know.
I haven't been in so long.
Oh my God, I would love to be in Paris with you guys.
Could you imagine?
I really just piggyback on your life in the grossest
they,
way.
No, my children
to
are,
experience anything through
they literally
truly
want,
Mighty's eyes.
But they, it's so funny because they have this version of the idea of going shoe shopping in Paris. And neither of my children they're not kids that want to go shopping. Like it's usually one of those things where like, I bought you some clothes and they're like,
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
They're not like, I want this. I want that.
Yeah.
But there's something, they've really romanticized the idea
oh my God, that's
of
quite
going
precious.
Shoe shopping of all things in Paris. And I explained to him, I go, if we went shoe shopping, it would not be for you.
Right.
Cause shoes in Paris are most likely what you're talking about are expensive and yeah. your feet are still growing. That's
yeah.
not happening.
Yeah.
Let's go to Target.
Paris and they will get their shoes.
Paris.
All right, let's go bread uh-huh. basket, flying in defiance of everything we just said.
Yes.
We're living in a fantasy world where three versions of a bread basket type food that you could have as much as we wanted and would never have to feel any shame and never have a gluten baby.
Fantastic. Well, the definite cheese platter.
Great.
I can murder a cheese platter.
Great.
Salted caramel, anything.
Ooh, mama.
Salted caramel, any sort of treat.
Yeah.
Any sweet, salty.
Yeah.
And pizza. I love me pizza.
Pizza, man. Number one answer, it's tried and true, deserves to be.
Yeah, right?
Deserves to be. Fantastic.
Good
All
cold,
right.
good hot.
I mean, that's just great. This is great. Okay, let's do vacation homes. I feel sure that Hawaii is probably in that list.
Got to do Hawaii because we do love it so. Mm-hmm. I would not be adverse to Italy.
Great, let's do it. And I've said it before, a bunch of us from the JV Club podcast are clearly all going to be moving into villas in Italy together. It's going to be this amazing community of women.
And I really love Sydney.
Haven't been.
I love, Sydney. Do you ever watch House Hunters International?
I have watched it. Yeah, I do enjoy the house hunting shows.
House Hunters International, it's literally people that are, they move to a totally different country. And then they show you, like, this used to be a church. It used to be an abbey. And
it's now it's all been converted. Like that, right?
And it's like $40,000. And you're like, what? It's first of all, it's like a cobblestone. It's an entire block. And it's all stained glass windows. And there's a garden. Yeah. And it's like,
it must be
really far away from where someone can work. Because how do you?
Yes, yeah.
I'm constantly like, let's
more isolated. I know. Why haven't we snapped up that old school in rural France that is $5,000?
It's $5,000. Yeah. Although clearly you're gonna have to homeschool because you couldn't be further away from civilization.
Correct. That's maybe an issue. Okay, right. Give me three skills, like fun, crafty-ish type skills that you wish you had, that you had more time for and that were like great at, like gardening or...
Gardening, for sure.
I probably remembered that from a conversation we've had.
Sweet Linus, do I wish I had time and skill for gardening.
Yeah, me too.
And baking. I wish I baked more. I wish I had time and fluency. I wish I could bake without recipes.
Oh yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Like just be those people that can
feels
just
like magic,
right? Just put the right amount, put an pinch approximation of, this, of the thing, and then it's incredible.
Yeah.
And one more, is that what you said?
One more, yeah.
Fluency with, huh? I'd like to be able to fix cars.
Love it.
I'd like to be able to tinker under the hood.
Oh, that'd be so... I would love to pull up to your house.
Could
and you see
imagine?
You. Of course, I immediately put you in like some real cute overalls with like the perfect grease smudge on. I've watched way too much television. Yeah, way too much television.
I would love to be able to like restore, like be one of those people that just has it up on the blocks.
Yeah,
and in my driveway.
Actually know
and
I'm just what's actually, supposed to happen. Yeah,
changing out the alternator.
Oh, that'd be so fantastic. I wholeheartedly agree.
Like
you do. Like, listen, you got a problem, take it to a mirror.
Sure.
You have a storefront. You have a shop. It does not necessarily require a lot of headache stuff. It's just like you just three great shops that you sell great stuff. But what is it? What are they?
I think one is just like a straight up boutique of like, you know, just stylish everyday clothes, like the, you know, for California life, California's version of daytime lady.
Great. I mean, I feel like you could have your own scarf shop.
I was just going to say, I feel like it, but I feel like boutique covers that with like, you know,
it
accessories.
Does, it does, but like, listen, like, no, I would not complain if I mean, just went in and it was like,
you know what I am super turned on by is a really good yarn store.
Great.
Because I love the knitting and the crocheting and all that kind of stuff. And I could spend, I mean, I drag my kids to that La Knitterie Parisienne. And God damn it. We could spend, luckily they're willing.
You're a yarn store. I love it.
I love a yarn store.
Last
and
one.
And a bakery.
Great. Yes.
With good coffee and delicious baked goods.
Hard to pass up.
Please.
Okay. I'm down to my final two. You can travel through time and visit any era for as long or as quickly as you want and for whatever reason you want. Three eras.
Really?
That's right. I have the power.
That's kind of incredible.
Make it possible for you.
That's kind of incredible. And I'm trying to think of what.
It's funny because I asked this question, but it's a question I can almost talk myself out of every answer. Like,
I know,
I come up with something like, and then I'm like, ooh, but I don't know, maybe da 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 da. Like I
know,
really
there,
have
know,
a struggle
so,
with it.
It's so funny. There's no. I mean, like I would like to go to Downton tomorrow.
I mean, that's great.
Right?
That's a great.
In a heartbeat.
So that's so let's say this then. It's less about eras. It could be that it's places from different time, yeah. But like that's a good way in of just saying like, okay, you can travel to not unlike the sort of with the girls with Portlandia, Hawaii, and Paris.
Yeah, like so it'd be like Downton, like, Moulin Rouge.
There
like,
you go. Yeah. So like a TV or movie kind of situation that you pop into.
The Matrix.
Yeah, it's so interesting. That's a.
Is that a popular one?
Well, I think it was just said like one of the last few podcasts I did, and so it's not super popular, but I always find that like things happen in little loops like that, yeah. Where there's just for whatever reason in the zeitgeist, yeah. There's it, or just is like a completely random coincidence, but it just suddenly
I think it's because I just downloaded little... Divergent to read.
Oh, what's Divergent? I don't know.
Divergent is the next. It's in the next trilogy of books for your Hunger Games reader.
Oh, I got it.
And it's a futuristic.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
Chosen people are shaking shit up.
Okay. All right.
But it's get on board for that. Shailene Woodley is going to star in the movie. I just saw a trailer for it, and it's going to be the next big.
Okay.
This thing. But I like a good sci-fi. Fantasy glimpse of possible future.
Yeah. Okay.
I find that exciting.
Okay. So if you...
especially when there's ass kicking in the it.
I yeah.
Like it when there's ass kicking.
So what... okay. So ass kicking wise, mm-hmm. What are three like abilities that you wish you had? It could be as simple as Kung Fu or as complicated as laser beams come out of your eyes.
Oh. I would like to have... non-gravity dependent aerial acrobatics abilities.
Great.
Right?
Great.
I would like to be able to stop time.
Mm-hmm.
And telekinesis.
Great. I wish I had that too. God, I wanted to have that so bad when I was mm-hmm. These guys are probably so tired of me saying that. But I would I was a real impatient kid, but I had all the patience in the world for staring at a marble
and trying to get it to move.
Oh,
yeah, trying to bend things, trying to get like...
Oh, man. There is no spoon.
No, I know. I don't. That'd be so great.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
God, it'd be so great. Okay.
Pleasing.
Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, pausing, returning with 100% guaranteed future. Plus. Okay, I got to give you the... I'm going to break the bad news first.
Okay.
The bad news... Well, the good news is that you have a second home in beautiful Italia.
Oh, some of your listeners. I know. We're all going to be together.
Well, listen, you're lucky that we're all going to be there. Because you can hang out in some of their mansions, apartments, and houses. You yourself... have a shack. That's just the nature of MASH.
That's okay. You know what?
Here, humble cliffside shack.
That's okay. I don't need much.
You don't need much.
And I'm handy and I have a glue gun.
It's going to be fine.
It's going to be great. Be fine. I'm going to make things.
From there or really from anywhere, with just a blink of an eye, you've transported to Hawaii.
Love it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Always good. Seeing the family.
I'm not sure where you have... your bakery.
Mm.
But I also like the idea. There's a lot of travel going on here. You would have your bakery, and interestingly enough, bakery and baking as the skill lined up. So,
they did.
Yeah. So you, instead of
look
gardening or
serendipitous,
the other thing that I've forgotten that I crossed out, baking and a bakery. Could be that you have a sweet little bakery in Italy. Could be that it's in Hawaii. Could be that it's here in Los Angeles.
Who knows?
Could be, who knows, maybe it's in Downton Abbey because you can also pop right over into that. Just the little village near Downton Abbey.
Did you notice they just got a mixer?
I did. Oh, I'm keeping up. I'm up to speed.
Miss Patmore is not having it.
She's always the last to join.
Miss Patmore.
She's always...
But I love that she sent the Valentine. Good for her.
I know.
Sweet, sweetheart.
Spoiler alert, everyone. They got a mixer. a perfect first date that you... Perhaps this is something that you bestow upon your daughters. Semifinals of tennis.
Oh,
you're probably like in the back watching, monitoring.
Maybe we could do a double date.
Right?
Yes.
You guys, everybody, this is great. This is great.
That's exciting.
Maybe you're there and you decide you need a little snack. Conjure up something salted and caramel.
Love it.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with
that. Nothing wrong with that. And any of this starts to feel like it's overwhelming or that it can't happen fast enough, worry not, because you do have the ability to stop time.
Fantastic.
Speaking of stop time, guys, I did that on purpose because it's time to stop.
What?
What?
Oh, thank She's you magic. So much.
Thank you. Oh, Mira, this is always great. Fun.
I feel like my brain just ate like two meals back to back. I'm so full. My brain is full, but in a very good way.
Fabulous.
Can people still, like, I'm sure that they can still check out the life class, right? Either it's
I think they can check out the life class and then
the book itself.
I'm answering questions. I just joined Twitter.
Love it.
And we have it's just a effing date website where we can be reached and answer things. Okay. So I'm at Miss America, which is MSAMIIRICA.
Don't forget that second I, guys.
Just at effingdate.com, and you can, I answer the questions. I engage in conversations.
It's great.
I'm trying.
Yeah, let's keep the dialogue going, guys. It doesn't have to end here.
It's not my natural medium. I like the
face-to-face, yeah.
I like the face-to-face with the talking and the voices.
But it is going to benefit people.
And seeing your pretty smile.
Thank you very much. Guys, I strongly encourage you to check that stuff out. We'll post it in written form, too, so that you can reference it and click on it and all that good stuff. And I will, be heading up to Sketchfest very soon. So I invite all of you to join in on that.
Is my husband going up there with
your
you?
Your husband will be up there Sweet. On the final weekend on February 8th. He's doing his famous Bring the Rock show, which will be really fun.
Oh, how fun.
And, yeah, guys, so talk to you next time. Feel free to weigh in with your questions and comments. And take care. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.